Hi, this is Chaz from the Road Gunner Podcast, also known as the Unnamed Trucker. When I want to listen to a show with practical information from an everyday guy who can't carry a cop just like me, I listen to my good friend Bob Main. Now on with the show.
And all guns should be clubs, all blocks should be 9mm and Model 19.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. You know, one of those good guys, a cop. I can't carry him, so I decide to be my own first responder, and I carry a gun. This week, this episode, I got another interview for you. Last week, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Rob Morse on faster training. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, go back and listen to that. This week, I have another instructor that I'll be talking to here, and you'll be hearing it here in just a few minutes. I want to start by saying that, you know, folks, this is the peak, not the peak. Well, yeah, maybe it is the peak of the political presidential run because, you know, the Republican convention is over. And folks, this show is not really about politics. I make small mentions of politics here on the Handgun World podcast, but not very many. But here's a small mention that I want to make. You know, the Republican convention is over. The Democrat convention is starting next week. I want to talk about the absolute worst thing that you could do this November. And the absolute worst thing you could do is to not vote. Some of you probably thought that the absolute worst thing you could do, and I was going to name a party, and I was going to say that's be the worst thing you could do. No, the absolute worst thing that you could do is to not vote. I have never understood why there are literally millions and millions and millions of people who are eligible to vote, and they don't. They're eligible to vote, but they never take advantage of that sacred right. There are so many people, folks. In fact, some even possibly listen to this podcast that live in a country that doesn't have the freedoms and the right to vote like we have here in the United States. Go vote this November. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm just going to say, go vote. Please. I've always felt that if you don't vote, you don't have the right to complain. Okay, enough on that. That's it. That's the extent of my politics on this show, because there's plenty of other places where you can get politics, especially right now. Woo, man. It's everywhere. Okay. I got my Plan B magazine base pads from Paul Carlson at Safety Solutions Academy. His prototypes of his second round, I believe, of the Plan B base pads for the Smith & Wesson Shield pistols. If you want to hear more detailed information, go to shieldplanb.com, shieldplanb.com. But I'm going to give you my first impressions here before I play the interview. The Smith & Wesson Shield is an awesome concealed carry handgun, especially if you like a small single-stack gun. It's still my favorite out of all single-stack 9mm out there. And many times I've mentioned why it's my favorite. Now, I recently bought a Walther PPS M2, and let me tell you, that Walther PPS M2 is a real good pistol. I'd say it's, in many ways, every bit as good as the Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm. It's your preference, basically. Take a pick. The Glock 43 is good, but I just don't like it as much as I like the Shield and the PPS. But Paul Carlson at Safety Solutions Academy, he's also on the Gun Nation podcast. And of course, he's been a guest of mine here on the Handgun World podcast before. He developed a different base pad for the magazine and a different sleeve for the 8-round magazines. It only applies to the 8-round magazines, not the 7-round magazines on Smith & Wesson Shields. And it also works on the 40 caliber guns. But it's on the extended magazines. Now, my initial impressions is, first of all, these things are very well made. Very well made. Made out of aluminum, I believe. And just really high quality. When you get them, you know that they're high quality. It's a high quality accessory. Now, if you look at Paul's videos at shieldplanb.com, that's shieldplanb.com. No, Paul's not a sponsor. No, I'm not some kind of a dealer for the Plan B base pads. When I get things that's sent to me for testing and evaluation, I talk about them. These are my first impressions. I have not been to the range yet. If you're an owner of a Smith & Wesson Shield, you probably notice that the sleeve on the extended magazine moves up and down the magazine pretty freely. Now, it's never hindered me inserting a magazine into the pistol. It's never gotten in my way, and it's never pinched my hand. But I don't have real big, meaty hands either. But for people who do have that problem, the Shield Plan B is going to fix that, because Paul designed a pretty cool interlocking mechanism where the base pad and the sleeve lock together, so it prevents that sleeve from moving up and down the magazine. Very, very good design. Very good design. I like it. Where I really like these Plan B base pads, I like two features on them that I've noticed so far. Number one, the one feature that I really like the most is it adds a little bit of a ledge for my pinky to rest on. The way that he's built them is it adds a little bit of a ledge. They're a little bit larger than the factory base pads that come on the Smith & Wesson Shield. And that just kind of helps my grip lock right into the pistol a little bit better. I noticed it right away. The minute I put them on, I noticed it when I started doing dry fire practice with these base pads on it. My hand just locks right in there. And it feels good, you know? The grip kind of felt a little slick on the Smith & Wesson Shield before putting these base pads on. But now it just kind of lets my hand lock right in there. And I get a real positive grip. And I like that. It kind of eliminates, I think if you put these base pads on, it eliminates the need for you to put some kind of grip tape or some kind of, you know, extra gripping surface on the shield, because your hand's not going to slide off of it very easily because it locks your hand into place, especially if you have large hands and you're shooting a small pistol like that. So that's a great part of the design. Also, it adds weight. It adds a little bit of weight because they are made out of aluminum, not plastic. And that is really a big deal because it really helps the magazines drop free. Some people have occasionally a hard time dropping the magazine out of a Smith & Wesson Shield, especially if it's an empty magazine. It's happened to me a couple times. It doesn't happen to me a lot. It's not a real constant problem, but it has happened to me. And you don't want that happening in a gunfight, folks. You don't. The pistol you're going to carry to depend your life on has to be flawless, ladies and gentlemen, because the slightest little problem costs you time. And do you know what time? Do you know what wasting time in a gunfight does to you? It gets you killed or hurt very badly. Even if it's a half a second or a quarter second, stop wasting time. I learned that in the Tom Givens class that I took. Stop wasting time. Don't tolerate anything that can cost you precious seconds or quarter of seconds. And so, making that magazine just come flying out of that gun, that's what I like about it. As soon as you press that mag release button, that thing comes flying out of that gun with the Plan B base pads. So, good job, Paul. Good job. Those are my initial impressions. Oh, he's got a really cool logo on him, too. I love it. I just love the logo. It's awesome. So, you got to go check it out. ShieldPlanB.com. Place your order. Get some Shield Plan B base pads for your Smith & Wesson Shield. And with that said, let me mention, I do have one sponsor, Concealment Solutions, concealmentsolutions.com. Jason just sent me a new Cobra outside the waistband holster for my SIG P229 Legion. So I carried that around all day today. Shield, to, shield. Yeah, I've been talking about the shield. SIG Sauer P229 Legion. So I got my new Cobra outside the waistband, very concealable holster, and I bought a mag holder to carry my extra mag, my spare mag, my horizontal mag carrier. And, oh man, it's just a great setup. And I'm really, really liking that pistol, the Legion 229. I'll be talking more about it in future episodes. But check out concealmentsolutions.com. If you use the word or use the coupon code HandgunWorld, you'll get 10% off your order except for belts. You'll get 10% off your order on anything you order at concealmentsolutions.com. Just please let Jason know I'm doing my job advertising for him. Use the coupon code HandgunWorld and you save 10%, right? How cool is that? So take advantage of it. Okay, I had a chance to interview Ben Chin. Ben Chin, C-H-I-N, of El Paso Licensed to Carry. El Paso Licensed to Carry. He's a licensed to carry instructor, among other things. And Ben talks about the daddy principle for concealed carry. The daddy principle for concealed carry. So that's my introduction. You'll find out what the daddy principle is when you listen to the interview coming up right now. Well, my special guest for this episode is Ben Chin from El Paso License to Carry. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you, Bob. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. You know, I want to tell everybody listening to this that Ben sent me an email. It was a pretty cool email, and I liked it. And he's also an instructor, and so I invited him to come on the show because I really liked what he had to say, and I figured it would be a good subject matter for the listeners to listen to. So you have been, Ben, you've been actually shooting for quite a long time, haven't you?
Yes, Bob. I've been shooting coming on 30 years now, and it doesn't seem to be that long, but that is indeed how long I've been actively shooting.
30 years.
Yes.
I remember one of the conversations that we had before we started this interview. You actually were a competitive shooter for a long time, weren't you?
Yeah, I still compete in IDPA and in ITSC, but I started my competition days back in Southern California, the Southwest Pistol League. And in the mid-80s, earlier mid-80s, my membership for IFSC is 3 digits. I'm a life member with 3 digits on my IFSC membership card.
Yeah, you see, you've been a member for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you're from Southern California, or you were there before you were there for quite a long time, because you shared with me, and I want you to share with the listeners, some of the interesting laws about self-defense in California. Why don't you tell them what you were telling me a little bit earlier?
Well, unlike Texas, in California, it's one of the strictest not only gun laws but also self-defense laws, and we do not have Castle's doctrine, and so duty to retrieve is absolutely needed. I tell my student how lucky we are in Texas, and I make a joke of it that if you live in California, you cannot start using your firearm to defend yourself unless that knife is 2 inches into your chest.
So, yeah, and I know that that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but you know, the retreat law is really a joke.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been several cases in California where bad guys corner a victim in the stairwell. And literally, that's hard for him to retreat because they got to go backwards going down the stairwell. So the victim starts defending himself, and he's being prosecuted because the the PA's office stated that he has a duty to retreat. He could have run down the stairs and so on, and instead of have ability to defend himself.
That's just crazy. But I'm glad that you remind your Texas students how good we have it here, because you don't have to do that here in Texas. In fact, a lot of states have a no retreat law into their self-defense statutes.
Absolutely. Yeah, just be very grateful that I'm now retired and moved to Texas.
So you retired, you moved to Texas, you have a company called El Paso License to Carry. Tell the people listening a little bit about what you do at El Paso License to Carry.
Well, I retired to El Paso about a year and a half ago, and basically that I picked El Paso primarily is because it's in Texas and it's very close to Southern California, where the rest of my family still live, and they can still drive there in about 11 hours to visit, and yet enjoy all the gun-friendly laws in Texas. First thing I did when I came to El Paso was apply for my license to carry. And within 2 months after I obtained my license, or actually within 2 months after I applied for license to carry, I immediately follow up with an instructor's application. So it took about 10 months to be scheduled to take an instructor's course. And yeah, this is January of 2016. I am now a certified Texas licensed security instructor.
Yeah, well, congratulations. So what do you do a little differently maybe than most licensed to carry instructors?
Bob, one of the reasons why I listen to your podcast is I find there's a lot of similarity between us. I'm also just a civilian, has absolutely no military or law enforcement background.
Yeah.
However, I think that's an advantage because for me as a student of self-defense for 30-some years, that I was never really drawn to an operator history, someone with an operator history or Tier 1 operators or law enforcement, because, in fact, that's not what I intend to do with my skills that I want to acquire. I really want to learn from a civilian perspective. That a civilian, we have different rules of engagements and different ways to look things. And frankly, I'm a little too old to be someone yelling at me and throwing my gun in the dirt and step on it and all that good stuff that I don't really enjoy that much. I just want to acquire a set of skills with a set of laws and understanding of the circumstances, how to defend myself and my loved ones.
Well, and that's good. And, yeah, it is sometimes an advantage just coming from a civilian background rather than law enforcement and military. And please, you know, folks, don't take this in any way, shape, or form that I am saying anything negative about law enforcement or military. It's just that those of us that have a civilian background, we kind of look at things a little bit differently, and sometimes we like to talk about what is practical out there. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I would never kick down the door, and I would never go, seeking out a bad guy. My entire purpose of teaching classes, as well as myself, self-defense experience, is how to defend myself and my loved ones. And I think that should be true with, most of your civilians, because that's not our job. That's not what we're trained to do. And, we're civilians.
Yeah. You know, earlier we were talking about some of the questions that you get when you're teaching a license to carry class. And I've taught a significant amount of license to carry classes. We used to call them CHL classes here in Texas. What are some of the – how about – why don't you share with the listeners some of the strange questions maybe that you get?
I think one of the first questions of people who are new to firearms, especially in self-defense, the question is, where do I shoot a person? Do I shoot to kill? And those things are somewhat related, I stress to my students, we kill to stop aggression. We never shoot to kill. That's not our purpose. We basically want to save ourselves and our families and so on, and we want to stop the aggression. The moment the aggression stops, then we cease our firing. You know, we need to assess the situation, make sure there's no additional bad guys nearby, and then once the bad guy is down, we stop shooting. As far as where to shoot is, we always teach, especially with beginners, the easy big target, which is center of mass. And, once they understand that is the biggest area to shoot and the area that moves the least during an encounter, meaning that head and arms and legs are moving, center of mass are relatively harder to move, so much easier target. And then during our advanced, intermediate advanced trainings, then we're talking about additional shots to vital areas, you know, such as if the bad guy's wearing a vest, the bad guy's got a hostage, and now you need to now transition into a much smaller target, perhaps in the head. And unfortunately, that's the circumstances, or that's the current environment that we live in. You know, look at Istanbul, and, a lot of people are wearing vests now. And plus, there might be suicide vests, and so you certainly can't put any rounds into the chest. So there's things that's the reason why I teach my students, not only you need to be able to do these, what we call index or instinct shooting with no sights when they're in close combat distance,
yeah,
but you need to have the skill level to transition to precision shots when it's needed.
Yeah, and all that, and I'm glad you tell students that, and all that stuff you really can't teach in a 4-hour license to carry class, because you got to teach the other stuff that the state requires. But at least you're encouraging them to get other defensive type of training.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. One of the first things I do is after introduction in my LTC class, I put up slides and tell students what this class is and what this class is not. And I emphasize to students, this class is not a training class. And this class is what, I emphasize to students, this class is what state of Texas require us to teach you as far as, and mostly dealing with legal aspect of the law.
I'm glad you say that. That's good. You let them know right up front that this is not a training class.
That's correct. I tell them this is basically, kind of like a driver's education class. You can get a driver's license, but that doesn't make you a race car driver.
Yeah, that's right. I like what you said before, where you discussed or you talked about that the threat seems to be different today. You have to do more than just learn how to shoot center of mass. It could be a hostage situation. The bad guy could have a vest. It could be an active shooter that's got an AR-15 trying to shoot up the place, and he might have armor on, and you're going to have to, can you make that precise headshot? You know, that's been controversial in the past. A lot of people poo-poo headshots and even call you a wacko if you are, training yourself to shoot headshots. But I think today that whole dynamic has changed. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was, tell my students, when I was a young man, people usually, we still had crazy lunatics out there, but they only killed people that they have a history with. Today, these lunatics are killing people who they don't even know. They're just out of the blue. They just want to take more numbers, take more people down, and they plan to die anyway, so they just want to rack up the numbers. So I think that this type of society we live in, it's kind of very scary.
It's totally different. You're right. These people, they don't care if they die. That's their objective.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, and I always tell my son, there's no guarantee, even you're an excellent shooter, you're a grandmaster, there's no guarantee that you're going to survive the encounter with these mad lunatics, but at least you give yourself some options and some alternatives, and perhaps you can save a few lives.
You know, and you also, earlier you said that the philosophy you teach is that you shoot to stop. And I do the same thing. I like to tell people, you shoot to stop. Now, if the bad guy dies in the process, well, then that's unfortunate for him because he chose to attack the wrong victim.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's, I think that's back to your question. That's a lot of newer students didn't understand. They think every time they fire a gun, somebody needs to die. And that's certainly not the case.
Yeah, but it may happen. It may happen in the course of you defending yourself and stopping the person from doing what they're doing.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct on that. I mean, it's your job is get home at night, take care of your family and yourself. And if you had to use a firearm to defend yourself and the perpetrator happened to die, that's very unfortunate. But we certainly are not there to execute them, and we just want to get home.
Yeah. Ben, what kind of firearms questions do you get in your classes?
You mean other than the 1,000 usual questions? What gun? From my revolver, what caliber, this and that, the typical question that I get all the time.
Well, tell us what your answers are to those. I think I'm curious and listeners are curious.
Well, for the person who's buying their first gun, I always tell them, come and take a class first, even the LTC class. You can rent a gun for us just for $10. And try it out, see if you like it. If you like it, and then you can explore more. First of all, you got to decide semi-autos or revolver. And then take a course, go and shoot, or maybe go to a gun range where they rent guns and rent half a dozen guns and figure out what fits you the best and what you can shoot well with and so on. And then, we could talk about, philosophy of size of the gun, the weight of the gun, how you're going to carry and all those calibers and all that. But initially, you just got to figure out very, very general terms. Now, if I got someone with a little bit more experience and they just want a recommendation of a reliable gun, I think a Glock 19 is a perfect beginner's gun. And, it's a compromise, good for concealment and good for self-defense and has enough firepower within that little compact pistol. I think it's a very good pistol. I personally came from the old school. I still carry a Glock 23, and I also carry a backup gun, a Glock 27. So I'm actually out there carrying two firearms when I go out, and they're all within the same system, so I can have interchangeable magazines.
Yeah, you have a Glock 23 and a Glock 27. For people that might not know, those are two 40 caliber Glocks, and so you've got your primary is the 23 and the 27 is your backup. So you like to have that ability to have the same type of magazines and the same ammo, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and the Glock 23 and 27 both are with a factory, flush mounted magazine, and then I carry at least three Glock 22 magazines on me somewhere. And just in case.
Yeah, and that's good. You're prepared. You're well prepared. You're well armed, and that's good. You are even carrying extra ammo and extra magazines, which I've talked about endlessly on this podcast. And I used to be back in the day. I used to be one that did not carry an extra magazine, but I finally saw the light, and now. It makes no sense to carry a firearm without an extra magazine.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people, I have a single stack 9mm. It's what I call my sweatpants gun. It's basically, I only use that gun for a very specific purpose. That's when I'm at home. I wear sweatpants. I'm in the backyard working. I'm in my flip-flops. And I don't want a heavy gun pulling down my drawstrings of my sweatpants. But any other time, I'm going to carry a double stack. People who has not been involved in extensive type of a training or shooting, they have no idea how fast those ammo can go.
yeah, you're right.
I competed 30 years in different competition, and I can tell you that it's not unusual to fire five shots in 1 second. And if you only got a five-shot, six-shot firearm, now what are you going to do? What are you going to do with this multiple attackers? What are you going to do with someone with a knife rushing at you? You fire three or four shots, the guy's still not dropping. I mean, you have to continue to fire until you go empty if you only have five, six rounds. So, and I also understand some people cannot handle a semi. If you cannot handle a semi-automatic, then you do the best you can, use a revolver. But if you have the capability and the skill set to be able to handle a little bit higher capacity gun, it's to your advantage. Because we all know that, forget about the terrorists, but just the muggers today, the carjackers and the people who crash into your doors in the middle of the night, a lot of times they work in groups.
Yes.
They're civil attackers. And so, you know, you got to figure out, you're using a very minimal power handgun. You're not using rifles. And it'll take several rounds to stop them. And an example I gave in the class, in my defense pistol class, which is a little bit more advanced training, is the Tula drill. You know, the guy with 7 yards, 21 feet from you, they can plunge a knife into you in 1.5 seconds. In that 1.5 seconds, you got to fire, as he approaches, you get closer and closer, you got to fire 3, 4, 5 shots, and hopefully you drop the guy.
Yeah.
If you don't, that knife is coming to your chest.
Exactly.
You know, even though this guy may eventually die, but he's going to plunge that knife into your chest unless you've gone through some more extensive training where you get off the X, you know, which is what we teach as well. I'm sure, Bob, you teach that as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And, so if you get off the X, you make it a little harder for the guy to change direction, especially if he took 1 or 2 rounds of it. But if he stands out there, his momentum is going to take that knife into you.
And yeah.
So there's a lot of things to think about.
Well, you know, getting off the X or whatever name you want to give it, people give it all kinds of different names. It's buying you time. It might be buying you that extra second or that extra half a second, and that could be very, very valuable in a life-threatening encounter.
Absolutely.
But you have to know how to do it.
Yeah. It's basically just more training. You know, I tell people, when they get their LPC license, is, you know, you took the first step. Just know that you want, a lot of people spend way too much money on hardware. They want the latest gun, the fanciest gun, this and that. And, for 20 years, I shot a second generation Glock 23, you know, and just recently, for reliability reasons, I bought a Gen 4. But for years, I shot 23, 22s, and they were all bought in, early 90s. And and they work fine, you know. And I would rather spend my energies and resources on training. I still train about 100 hours, about 96 hours to be specific, per year, which is 3 four-day classes per year right now.
Nice,
and
very
in addition
nice.
To... Yeah, in addition to F6 and IDPA matches, I shoot really on a monthly basis. And I'd also do at least, an hour drive practice almost every day.
96 hours a year. That's great. 96 hours a year. That's excellent.
Yeah, that's 3 four-day classes.
Classes, yeah. And how much dry fire practice did you say you do?
I do about an hour. Sometimes I do 2 hours, but lately I've been cutting back to 1 hour. I was getting a lot of calluses on my hand, and literally I had to tape up my fingers before I do dry practice. Dry practice is not just pulling trigger from. Dry practice is working out a very specific time malfunction clearance as well. For instance, one of the things that we need to do from the training that I'm doing is from a slide lock position, you need to be able to reload a firearm and get out the X in 1.8 seconds.
In 1.8 seconds, okay.
Yeah, so basically your slide lock, that timer starts, you need to drop the magazine, take 1 step or 2 steps to either side of you, reinsert the magazine, hit the slide release, all that in 1.8 seconds. And I could tell you, I do at least 20 of that every single day. And
for about
8 months, I could never hit 1.8 seconds. Now I'm probably 75% hitting within the time limits. Occasionally, you still mishandling the gun, the magazine won't come out, or when you insert a magazine, you didn't get it quite right. You know how Glock magazines are. The mag well. By the way, there's no modification can be done to the gun. You cannot use the mag wells or anything, and the only thing they allow is a standard factory slice stock, an extended factory mag release, but there's nothing else in, other than factory stuff. They do not allow you to put anything else in to assist you.
Who doesn't allow it?
This firing training school that I go to.
Oh, okay.
And also that the other thing that I spend quite a time doing is a type 3 malfunction in 4 seconds. You have to clear type 3 in 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm. And for people that don't know what that is, that's normally a double feed. You might have one round that is sort of underneath the round that did not come out of the chamber.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a double feed, and then then I practice a lot of on support hand stuff, one-handed malfunctions, and support hand malfunction, type one, type two, type three. So a lot of time spending on just gun handling skills in addition to shooting skills. I'm also training myself to be an ambidextrous shooter, so I do have, I do spend a portion of my draft practice and draw and present and shoot with my supported hand. And so basically, quite a bit of work.
Wow, Ben, you're teaching yourself to be an ambidextrous shooter. That's good.
Yeah, I can shoot almost as accurately and maybe 75% speed of my dominant hand with my support hand. So, there's still lots of learning to do, but, I'm working on it just like everybody else.
And, you, Ben, you're one of the few people that I've had a chance to interview and talk to on the Handgun World podcast that knows how to say ambidextrous.
Okay.
and the reason I'm laughing is because English was not your first language, was it?
That's correct. I came to this country when I was 12.
You came to this country when you were 12 from where?
I'm originally from Taiwan.
You're originally from Taiwan, and English was not your first language, and you know how to say ambidextrous.
Yes,
so many people just butcher that. Ambidextrous is what they say. It's not, folks, it's not pronounced ambidextrous. It's ambidextrous. That's how you say that. I just thought, I was chuckling when you said that because I thought, wow, he nailed it. He got the pronunciation correct.
Well, Bob, that came from the early 1911 days, right? We had safeties and so on, and that's where I learned that word back in the early 80s.
Yeah. So you're from Taiwan. Talk a little bit about what are the gun laws like in Taiwan?
Well, as I know, I haven't been back there since I was 12.
Yeah, but what about you got any relatives back there? Do you ever talk to them about any of this stuff?
No. I was too young when I left Taiwan, and many of my classmates from elementary school actually also immigrated to the United States a couple of decades ago. Yeah, so basically I grew up here in this country.
You shared with me before we did this interview, you have a couple of unique nicknames. Do you want to share those with people?
Sure. I think you're referring to the daddy principle. Is that what you're referring to?
No. You told me about a couple of nicknames that you have.
Oh, nicknames for myself.
Yeah.
Some of these nicknames are from friends and jokingly. And one of them is, I've been known as the Chinese redneck.
Chinese redneck.
Yeah.
Why do they call it?
I guess that's because I moved to Texas from California. And I love guns. I love shooting. So they put that two and two together, and that's what they call me.
And they call you the Chinese redneck. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good decision moving from California to Texas. I like that decision.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I really enjoy Texas. It's such a refreshing mindset that you move to a state that they actually trust its citizens. Where in California, you're guilty before you can prove yourself is innocent. And here it's basically they give you a lot of freedom. It's up to you to live up to your obligation as a law-abiding citizen.
Yeah, good. All right, so let's talk about the daddy principle. Is this a principle that you teach in your license to carry classes?
Yes. Yeah. Basically, I came up with this acronym, DADDY, and D-A-D-D-Y, and I teach that in all my LTC class to sort of set the perimeter of defense shooting, and that combines with several things. And you and I had talked about, most people think that concealed carriers are looking for a gunfight. I could tell you that's absolutely the last thing that I want to do in my life.
Me too.
Is getting to any confrontation.
Yeah. Me too. I don't want to do it either.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess the daddy began with the first D, and the first D is deselect. And basically, I share with my students that if they know that every single victim of any crime, and other than these random shootings that we have now, but the typical crime being committed, you're being selected as a victim. Mm-hmm. The bad guy is looking you up and down, maybe watch you for a while, and he made a decision he can take you. That's a decision he made. Very much like a lion that hunting a zebra in Africa. He's picking out the weak one that he thinks he can take doing a selection process.
Mm, okay.
So what I teach my students, you need to deselect yourself. And how do you deselect yourself? Number one, it's going to be situation awareness. You need to know your surroundings. If you're alert, that's going to discourage someone else come attack you. They rather find a soft target rather than someone who's alert and maybe able to defend themselves. So that's the first thing you do. And the second letter in DADDY is A, is avoidance. And that's not only to avoid someone who looks suspicious in a parking lot, and you go back the other way, go back into a store, or go back to elevators, or whatever you need to do to avoid it. Someone spy your car, and then they hang it around there. You know what? Go opposite direction, just wait it out or call the police if you think something's going on. It's basically that we, in our industry, that several well-known instructors, they say, avoid stupid people in stupid places doing stupid things.
At stupid
so
times.
So that's a big avoidance. At stupid times.
At
exactly.
Stupid times, yeah. I like to add that at the end, at stupid times.
Yeah, that's really good. I need to add that into my lecture as well. Basically, if you hang out with the wrong people, wrong places, wrong times, bad things are going to happen. And all that could be avoided if you just be a little bit aware of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next letter is another D. The second D is de-escalate. And de-escalate means you are now entangled into a confrontation of a sort. Typically, they're verbal. And you need to de-escalate instead of go to the next level, de-escalate. And I teach my student, swallow your pride, and there's six words, they're magic. Actually, seven words. All you got to say is, I'm sorry, it's my fault. Right, and you can de-escalate and then back out of the situation, even though you may be right. Maybe a road rage situation, maybe anything else that confronts you, but let's be smart about this whole thing. Let's not bring this thing to a point where you have to use a firearm and kill yourself or kill someone else or hurt yourself. And so I rather say, I'm sorry, it's my fault, and just graciously bow out of the deal.
But that's five words.
That's five words? I'm sorry, it's my fault?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, it's my fault. But anyway, but that's good. Those are good those are good five words to use. I'm sorry, it's my fault.
Right.
When you use that, it kind of diffuses them a little bit, doesn't it?
Exactly. I mean, that's what you want. And if you're a hot-headed person and you continue this argument, it's going to escalate to a point where maybe the guy shows you a screwdriver And now you're at a point of no return. You have to shoot him and defend yourself to get out of the situation.
So that's the de-escalate. But, you know, that's the third letter in daddy is de-escalate.
Right. Okay. Well, that's the second D.
The second D, yeah, the third letter. Right. So I have, and I've talked a lot about de-escalating. I've dedicated entire podcast episodes to de-escalating. I think it's very important. And there's going to be a time where you cannot de-escalate, and then that's when you got to be able to pull the trigger, right?
Yeah, that's your third D. The third D is defend.
Defend.
Defend yourself, defend your loved ones. And the motto I give my students, fight to win, not just survive. You don't want to fight just to survive. When you are come out fighting, you're coming 120%. That's it. There's no point in return.
So say that again. Fight to win, not what?
Not just survive.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and when you come out fighting, that's crossing the line. Once you cross the line, there's no return. You are fighting to stop the aggression.
Good stuff.
And you're going to fight to win. We're not fighting to just survive the encounter. Because let me give you an example. If the guy plunged a knife into your arm, your chest, you might survive the encounter, but you're disabled for life.
Mm-hmm.
How does that help you in servicing your family and yourself?
So that's a good way. You just illustrated your point very well. Fight to win, not just fighting to survive, because fighting to survive can leave you messed up for the rest of your life.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't want to survive. Once I'm crossing that line, I'm the most docile, fragile old man you're ever going to see on the street. But once I cross that line, I'm coming out with a can of whip ass.
That's good. That's good, Ben. Yeah. All right, and what is the why?
The why is very simple. It basically, your ass is in trouble. And if you have to use a firearm to defend, even if you don't shoot anyone, you display that firearm, you know there's a whole bunch of consequences that come along with it. The first thing is a criminal investigation.
Yeah.
That followed by civil litigation and followed by financial and emotional burden on yourself. And we're talking about years and years of civil litigation or financial and emotional burden.
And the emotional burden could even last the rest of your life.
Exactly. Yeah. And so basically, I use the daddy principle. And to illustrate to my students, my credo is, if you're going to deploy your firearm, you have exhausted every other possibility. Now your life or your loved one's life is in danger. You have absolutely no choice. So now you're going to have to solve the problem by winning it. But just to know, just to expect that once the firearm is deployed, there are consequences that can come along. Every single time. There's no exceptions.
And a lot of different consequences, and you said it. You know, it could be a civil trial. It could be a criminal trial. It could cost you a lot of money. And the emotional, few people talk about that, and I'm glad you brought it up. It could have an emotional impact on you for the rest of your life. Don't you agree with that?
Absolutely. I gone through some personal tragedies in my life in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I can tell you now that every single night for almost 2 years now, when there's a quiet moment in the middle of the night, when I close my eyes and fall asleep, and this memory of this tragedy comes up. Every single night.
Mm-hmm.
There's no exception to it. I don't typically think about during the day, I'm busy doing other things, but in quiet night, that does come up. And, it's very sad, but this emotional things that will come up during a quiet moment.
And I want to say something about that, Ben, because, we talked earlier in this episode about the different types of threats that we face, and today we have a completely different type of threat. I just want to say to listeners, even if Johnny Jihad comes into the building with a rifle and starts shooting the place up, and you are fortunate enough to be able to take him out, you're still going to deal with a lot of emotion. Some people are going to say that you were a hero. Some people are going to absolutely crucify you verbally because you had a gun. And maybe you had a gun in a place where you weren't supposed to have a gun, but you still shot Johnny Jihad and you saved people's lives. There are people who are not going to understand that. And for a long time, if not forever, you are going to deal with the emotions of that.
Absolutely. And also on the flip side, I always tell my student, you know, we are not law enforcement. Nope. We have absolutely no obligation to prevent a crime.
Right.
You know, if it's a property crime of any sort, you can bet on it. I absolutely will not get involved. And however,
yeah, it's not worth
a madman. Yeah, you know, if there's a madman starts shooting innocent people in the bank, then as a concealed carrier, you still have no obligation to engage. But that's now crazy. You're going to have to let your conscience to decide what are you going to do.
Yeah, let
now,
your conscience.
Now, if I have a wife and kids at home that depend on me, you know, 100%, I won't fault you for not engage because your life is not being threatened. You know, and however, your conscience may decide. You know, a whole bunch of innocent people getting killed. Can you sleep at night? That's a question. That's a balance. You have to balance between go home to be safe, to support your own family, versus if you're going to have emotional aftermath because you did not get involved. That's something that each individual needs to decide. And as anything else, I typically tell my students, all these things, you should really thought it out before the crisis hit. Because in the middle of a bank, someone comes and starts shooting, and you're now trying to make a decision. That's very, very difficult. And most people, including myself, I don't think I can do it. But had I stopped this group ahead of time, I said, you know what? I really think I have a moral, ethical obligation to engage and save as many lives as I can, perhaps even add a pearl that I get hurt myself. But I would do it. Or your high priority is, you know, I got 4 kids at home and a wife, and I need to take care of them. I need to get home. That's something that you got to decide.
And there's no right or wrong answer to that. It is a truly a personal decision. I think a lot of it has to do with your spiritual life. And, you know, people know what my spiritual life is. And I feel that I'm right with God. And so if my life ends because I'm trying to save somebody else, then so be it. You know, but some people are not there. Some people are not at that point, and some people say, hey, no, I'm just going to take care of myself, and as long as I'm not in danger, I'm fleeing out of this building. I'm getting out of here because that's the best thing for me to do.
Yeah, Bob, that's absolutely legitimate because our task as a civilian, as a licensed handgun carrier, is that we're there to protect ourselves and our loved ones.
Right.
You know, each individual has an option to protect themselves as well. If they chose not to protect themselves, it's really not my job and obligation to protect them. You know. However, like you said, it's something emotionally, something that you need to decide. Depends on your circumstances. Depends on your skill level. You need to know if you could do something or not do anything. Maybe you're just a new shooter. It's best for you not getting involved, and because you might shoot the wrong person or whatever, you know. And so that's a decision each individual needs to make. And I don't fault anybody for making that decision.
No,
and,
I don't either.
For me, I just know, you know, I have a little bit of skill. I sort of know what I'm doing, and I do. You know, I don't want in the middle of the night and think about what I should have done, what I could have done for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's good stuff, Ben. We got to wrap this up in just a few minutes. So before we wrap it up, let's review the daddy principle again one more time. And, and I want to make sure I was listening and taking good notes. So correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
But the first D, deselect yourself. Make yourself a harder target. Don't make yourself one of the people that the bad guy likes to select. Right?
Right, yeah. And also, big part of that is the situational awareness. You know,
situational awareness.
Know your surroundings. Yeah, know your surroundings, and don't walk around like 80% of people today has their head buried in their phone.
Yeah,
you know, if you're doing texting, you're doing Pokemon or whatever the heck you're doing, it's very easy for someone to sneak up behind you, hit you in the head, and take whatever you got, including your firearm.
And that would be the avoidance part of that would be A, avoidance, right?
No, that's B, deselect.
Oh, that's
make yourself a hard target.
Okay. Yeah, like you said, don't be one of these people out there chasing Pokemon and not paying attention. You know, when all that craze started recently, I thought to myself, you know, those are prime targets for a bad guy. I wonder if those people really think about that.
Yeah, most people are living condition white, 24/7. They have absolutely no idea. And, you know, just go to the mall and just sit quietly and observe people walking by. And that's 90% of the sheep out there, you know. And, you know, for us sheepdogs, we're very much aware of the possibility of danger. And, you know, we're not looking for danger, but we certainly are looking or at a lookout for any possibility of danger.
Yeah. All right. So A is avoidance.
Right.
And that's the four S's. Don't do stupid things with stupid people in stupid places at stupid times.
Right.
And that right there, you know what? That's going to solve 90% of your problems because it'll keep you from having problems.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then
go ahead.
And then the third D, de-escalate, I think that's, you know, that's one of the best points of this is that, you know, it's you got to diffuse the situation. And I do like your teaching, you know, to say, hey, I'm sorry, it's not my fault. Or it is my fault. I'm sorry, it's my fault.
Exactly. Yeah. This is things that time to swallow your pride just a little bit, you know, because the fact that if you continue on that path to escalate, things are going to go bad.
But you have to then have the next letter, which is another D. You do have to have it within you to defend and fight.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a point of no return. Once you decide to come out fighting, you know, you're vicious. You know, you're there to win. You're there to stop whatever the activity there is. And that's what I believe. You know, I might not be successful doing it, but I'm sure going to give it a hell of a try.
Well, and you'll be in that position because deselect, avoidance, and de-escalate didn't work.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it didn't work. And, you know, you exhaust all your options, you know, legally, morally, ethically, you've done all you can. There's nothing else you can do, you know. And so at that point, you need to be thinking about yourself and all the people around you that you try to protect.
And then why your butt is in trouble.
Yeah, your butt is in trouble. Yeah, but just be aware of that because most people think, you know, this is justified shoot. I'm perfectly okay. No, you're going to be arrested. You could be handcuffed. And, you know, they're going to take you downtown, and immediately you got to figure out, you know, who's going to take care of whoever's at home, whether it's your children, whether it's your dogs and your cats. Immediately that you have no access to any of that stuff. And even though they may decide to let you go, think it's justifiable, but you got to go through the process. It's what we call that you can beat a rat, but you can't beat a ride.
Exactly. And I want to add to this, Ben, this is why if you're going to carry a gun and you intend to use it, you need to have a membership to organizations like Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, or Texas Law Shield or U.S. Law Shield or U.S. Concealed Carry Association, places that offer memberships that will come to your legal aid because your butt is going to be in trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah, I am a member of Texas Law Shield, so being a member ever since I remember when I moved to Texas, I took the CCL class. Right at the class, I signed up for the membership. I mean, it is so reasonably priced to get kind of type of peace of mind that really it's foolish not to choose one of these prepaid legal services, so to speak, and to protect yourself.
And I want to say, I have no financial interest in either of these services. They're not a sponsor. They don't pay me any commissions or anything. I am personally a member of both Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network and U.S. Law Shield.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
it's important thing is just do your research and find one's most suitable for you and commit yourself for that insurance and peace of mind. Because literally, we're talking about, if you had to use a gun to defend yourself, $25,000 to $30,000 retainer fee.
Yeah.
It's not the cost of the life of this case. It's retainer fee to attorney to represent you.
Absolutely. And then there's more costs beyond that, for sure.
Absolutely. There's court costs. There's expert witness costs. There's lab test costs. If you have savings or equity in your house, just kiss all that goodbye.
Kiss it all goodbye. Before we close and sign off, Ben, let me give you some advertising. Your website is elpasolicensetocarry.com. Did I get that right?
That's absolutely correct. And we try to make it easier for the people who want to get contact with us, because a lot of words are spelled. If you use, you can also reach us by using the abbreviation of each word, which is EPLTC.com.
And that EPLTC. So EPLTC.com or El Paso License to Carry.com. And on Facebook, if they just search El Paso License to Carry, you're there.
Exactly.
I'm looking at your Facebook.
Right now. Yeah. And lately I've been very, very active in supporting Donald Trump and actually just anti-Clinton. And I have never been this political all my life. I mean, I always voted. But after what I learned, what Clinton did with the email scams, with the Benghazi, you know, people lost their lives, and I just couldn't stand it. I feel like I have to do something just for the good of our country.
You know, I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, Donald Trump was not my first choice, but you know what? Right now, he's my only choice because I am not I'm not going to vote for Hillary. And even from a Second Amendment perspective, you know, to all my friends listening to this podcast, what do you want? Do you want somebody who literally wants to eradicate the Second Amendment and will appoint Supreme Court justices who will also try to eradicate the Second Amendment? Or do you want somebody who won't do that, who will preserve your rights? And, you know, I get it. I get it that Trump was not some people's first choice. He wasn't my first choice. But you know what? It's a clear choice now. Which one's going to be more friendly to gun rights? And I think that's a pretty easy, no-brainer decision.
Yeah, Bob, I came from a place with the exact same thinking as you are. You know, I say Trump is very confrontational, lack of political savvy, and so on. But, you know, after watching for the last few months, especially in the last few days in the Republican National Convention, watch his speech and see what his children said about him and so on, I became a fan now. Set aside his personality, but that's the way he is. He's not a politician. He's very honest. He tells you like it is, whether you like it or not, whether it's good for him politically to do that or not. He's telling you the truth. And on the flip side, you got this Clinton lady, and she literally, forget about Second Amendment for a second. I really have no respect and don't trust her because she has very little integrity in everything she did.
That's right.
And on top of that, she's going to, you know, being hypocritical, taking our guns away while her bodyguards are carrying the same firearm or similar firearm that we as a taxpayer paid for the last 26 years for the Clinton family.
Yeah.
And I did a little research, and I think I came out, there's some figures showing that we as taxpayers have paid $13 million in the last 26 years for Clinton's family's Secret Service costs.
Yeah.
And so she's protected, and average peasants, we don't deserve to be protected. You know, take our firearms away. And pass more laws where murder is already illegal.
Right.
So if someone's going to break that law, you think they're going to obey? Oh, sorry, I won't bring my gun into this gun-free zone.
Yep.
It's just so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but Ben, it's amazing there are still lots of people who think that way.
Yeah, well, that's, again, you know, it's lack of education on the general public.
That's exactly,
you know, a lot of public. I have personal friends, and they're good friends, but when it comes to the gun issue, they have seen absolutely nothing wrong with what Hillary is proposing, because they're not shooters. They don't know how to use a firearm, so it makes absolutely no difference to them if the firearm is banned or not banned. What they don't realize is we live in a changing world that 13 million CCWs in the U.S., and there's over 1 million CCWs in Texas now, we are the first responder.
Yeah, but have you ever asked one of these friends of yours what they would do if they were attacked?
You know, I had a lady I had several discussion with her, and she's absolutely anti-gun. I invite her to my LTC class, just sitting to see how we've approached the subject. And she obviously going to learn that using firearms actually last resort, if that's what I teach. But she has refused to come to the class right now. She's always busy, this and that. At the same time that she says, you know, I just don't think I can use a firearm. You know, I'm glad we don't have a firearm in my home, because I think my father would have killed my mom. And so when you're dealing with that type of illogical thinking, it's really hard to overcome.
Yeah.
I'm still calling her once a month. Every time I teach a class, I always invite her to come sitting. And say, hey, are you busy this coming Sunday? If you are, if not, then you're welcome to come and sit in my class. So,
well, you know what? I'd like to finish with this, Ben. For people like that say, I just don't think that I could use a firearm, and therefore I'm not going to have one. You know, I would like to encourage people, this is how I think you should respond to that. Be nice and say, okay, I respect that. You know, it's your right also to not own a firearm. Just please do me a favor. Don't interfere with my right to own a firearm and protect myself.
Absolutely. Perfectly said, Bob. That is the proper response.
You know, just I don't want these people to try to interfere with mine. If a person's anti-gun, fine. They have a right to be anti-gun.
Right.
But what they don't have a right to do, they don't have a right to take away my Second Amendment right to have a gun.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And the problem is all these people still live in a bubble. You know, they think that call 911 is going to come in time and save their lives. And they don't realize, you know, the CCWs, 1 million CCW in Texas and 13 million in U.S. are the first responder. They're the ones that are going to get to you faster and closer than anybody else. People still don't realize in the Pulse nightclub shooting, it took 3 hours before the first responder stepped into the club. 3 hours.
Well, now wait a minute. I don't think it took 3 hours for the first responders to get there, but it took 3 hours for the whole incident to end.
No, what I read was 3 hours for them to enter.
Really?
They were setting up perimeters, doing what they did. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Okay.
And quite a few, few news sources for 3 hours. And I mean, regardless whether it's 3 hours or 30 minutes, a lot of people died during that time.
Oh, absolutely.
And all these people got killed instead of hiding in the bathroom. If one or two person had a firearm, they could have saved a lot of lives.
Yeah, that's the sickening part of it, is that even if there would have been one or two people in there that would have had something, it could have saved a tremendous amount of people.
Yeah, I mean, I teach my students, don't shoot until I absolutely have them. This is one of those situations you absolutely had to. You have no choice. You have no way to escape. And the only way to get out of this problem is to neutralize the crazy lunatic.
Absolutely.
And, that's pretty straightforward. And I'm preaching to the choir here, and I think anybody listening to your podcast probably all agree. But unfortunately, we can't get the other side to see our viewpoint. They're just got their... They still think 911 is going to save them. Realize the nation...
I really have no idea the demographics of everybody who listens to this podcast. There might be some people who are on the fence about firearms, but maybe they're tuning into this podcast just to check it out, just to kind of see what it's all about. So we might not be only preaching to the choir here. We might be educating some people that need a little education on firearms and self-defense.
Yeah, hopefully that's the case. And, I certainly try to do my part to educate people on Facebook through all my postings and my editorials, and as well as to my website. I write things in my blog, so hopefully the people who are interested have a source to take a look at. And, just very quickly, go back to the response time, 911. Nationwide is 11 minutes.
11
minutes. If you live in a rural area... Yeah, nationwide, 11 minutes. If you live in a rural area, it could take up to 30, 40 minutes.
Wow,
imagine how much carnage would take place in 11 minutes.
Yeah, an unbelievable amount.
Yeah. And you have a saying, right, regarding what do you say, the minutes away and...
Yeah, when seconds count, police are minutes away.
Exactly, and that's literally seconds. If you think about your safe at home and so on, what happens to two or three guys kicking your door, and you are hiding in your bedroom? How many seconds do you have before it reaches you?
Not many.
Do you think 9/11? Yeah, you think 9/11. Police going to get here on time to save you?
No, nope, I mean, they're not. They're not.
Yeah, I mean, people just don't think through this type of stuff. And that's really unfortunate, and that's what we battle with every day.
Yeah, well, and we have to do our best to educate them. Well, Ben Chin, thanks very much. I appreciate your time. This was very nice of you to agree to do this. And for those of you who are in the El Paso area and you don't have your license to carry yet, go to elpasolicensetocarry.com and sign up for one of Ben's classes. Ben, thanks very much for coming on the Handgun World podcast.
Bob, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Anytime. Let's do this again sometime, okay?
Will do. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you, Ben Chin. That was a very good interview. Thanks very much. I really appreciate that analogy, the daddy principle. And, we spent a lot of time talking about de-escalation. And I thought that was a real good part of that interview. And also making sure that you are deciding not to be a soft target. That's the big deal, I think. I think that's the first step, is people have to make a decision. Would you agree? People have to make a decision that they're no longer going to be a soft target. And I think that's probably the hardest part for a lot of people. I don't know why. Maybe some people don't know where to start. Maybe deciding that you're not going to be a soft target anymore, maybe one of the reasons why people have a hard time making that decision is it means that they have to admit that there's that level of danger and evil out there. Aha, I think, yeah, maybe that's it. They just don't want to admit it. It's too painful to admit it. Do you know somebody like that? It's just too painful for them to admit that they have to worry about what type of target that they are, and that they have to make sure that they're more of a hard target. It's much more fun to take your smartphone out and play Pokemon. You know, it's much more fun to get on Facebook and worry about all that, and it's, you know, but it's no fun thinking about making yourself a harder target for somebody to mess with. Well, you know, as I think about this, I wonder, what have we come to in this society? Well, that's for another day and another episode. Once again, check out his website, ElPasoLicenseToCarry.com, ElPasoLicenseToCarry.com. If you enjoyed this podcast or any of the other podcasts that I do, consider supporting me financially. You don't even have to spend any extra money. Please make sure you use my Amazon store whenever you make any Amazon purchases. As a matter of fact, I made a big purchase on Amazon. Well, not a big one, but a decent-sized purchase on Amazon recently. And guess what? I bought it from myself. From my own store. How cool is that? That's kind of fun. Get a little bit of money back on what I ordered. But anyway, go to handgunworld.com. Go to the Amazon store first. Use my link whenever you make an Amazon purchase. And let Amazon help me out. Don't forget, on September 17th, Saturday, September 17th, yours truly will be teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. I'm going to spend one day. Ben and I have condensed our advanced curriculum down to the one-day format, Worst Case Scenarios. That's the name of the class. Worst Case Scenarios. And basically, I've got four of them for you. I'm going to be teaching that class myself. Ben has another commitment. And I got four what I consider some of the worst case scenarios that I'm going to help you solve with your handgun, assuming that you have to use your handgun to solve those problems. Maybe you don't, but that's what I'm going to teach. So, for those of you who have taken our advanced class before, this one's going to be quite different. So go to handgunworld.com, go to the class sign up page. It'll say training classes, I believe, and you'll be able to sign up for Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced September 17th in San Antonio at Lone Star Handgun Range. We also recently uploaded some new videos to the Shooters Club, so become a member of the Shooters Club for only $8 a month, $75 a year, only $8 a month. Folks, that's a piece of cake for you to afford. It's easy. And you get to watch some really cool instructional videos that Ben and I have put together. Even some film and some footage from actual classes that we've taught. And last but not least, would you consider leaving me a voicemail? Let me know what you think or ask a question, whatever you want to do. 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. I'm Bob Main. Thanks for listening. This is the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Shoot straight. Shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. Gun.
should be